Welcome to Indie Unplugged, the podcast that's your front row seat to the real talk of Indianola. I'm Aaron Young, your friendly neighborhood host, and we're diving deep into unfiltered stories, candid chats, and the nitty-gritty of our vibrant city. Think of us as a crash course in all things Indianola. No fancy jargon, just real conversations. So, get comfy, hit that play button, and let's explore the heart and soul of our community together on Indie Unplugged. Welcome back to another episode of Indie Unplugged, a City of Indianola podcast. And today we're going to have a wonderful conversation with our very own Chief of Police, Brian Scher. Chief Scher, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be here, Aaron. I think these are wonderful. You're doing a great job, and I hope lots of people get to listen to them.
Appreciate it. Yeah, no, I think the response so far from the community on these podcasts has been overwhelmingly positive. A lot of engagement from our community tuning in and listening to all these conversations. And we're just at the beginning of so many great talking points and so many great conversations we're having collectively throughout the city of Indianola. But you've been with the police department now for roughly 30 years, right?
I'm in my 30th year, so yeah, I've been here a long time.
Just talk about the progression of your career and just help people get a better idea of who you are as a person and as a professional.
Absolutely. So I'm a Hawkeye, graduated from the University of Iowa in 1993, go Hawks. From there, I started applying places like a lot of young people do when they want to get into law enforcement. So I applied at Indianola and I applied at Clive. And fortunately for me, Indianola called first, and I accepted the offer. And I've been here ever since September 15th, 1994 is when I started.
Man, just how much change, just how much has this town evolved over your 30 years?
I mean, that's a whole nother podcast we could talk about. But, you know, as we're getting into my career here, what you wanted to talk about, things have changed drastically in the last 30 years. I remember when I first started, the officers, the public did not know I was a police officer. I got hired to work undercover for as long as I could. So from September to December, I worked undercover. The chief of police and I had one other contact with the sheriff's office were the only people that knew I was a police officer. And my job at the time was to gather intelligence and purchase narcotics. Back in 1994, the older generation here will remember that we used to have a terrible problem with kids, narcotics, and alcohol on the square. There were hundreds and hundreds of kids that would gather there every weekend. You know, you got to remember, this is before podcasts. This was before the internet, really. This was before cell phones and all that stuff. So people were outside, and they would gather. And unfortunately, some illegal things were going on at the time, and I worked undercover and gathered intelligence and made lots of narcotics purchases before anyone even knew I was a police officer.
Wow. I mean, that's quite the story. So then as you've kind of journeyed through, you know, your police career, you became chief of police. Was that always the goal throughout staying in one community through your career to then kind of be at the top and leading the force?
I mean, my goal has probably evolved over time. I knew from the beginning that I really love this town. As people may not know, I'm from a suburb of Chicago, Skokie, Illinois, 60,000 people plus. I loved growing up there. I love my Cubs. I love my Bulls. I love my Blackhawks. Love my Bears. But I always felt like I was an Iowan. I really did. I'm an outdoors person, and we can get into that a little bit later. I like to hunt, I like to fish, I like to golf, I like to do the outdoors things. And to do that where I'm from was a lot more difficult. Not impossible, but a lot more difficult.
When you became chief of police, what did that moment feel like to you to kind of be, you know, leading the force and leading the organization that you've dedicated a bulk of your life to day in and day out?
Boy, that's a loaded question. So what did it feel like? So for the public to know, I've held every job at this police department, every single job, including janitor, garbage taker, outer, drywaller, every job. You know, we do our own stuff. We don't fleece the taxpayers with stuff that we can do. So, I mean, I've literally held every job from patrol officer to For 5 years, I was the Warren and Marion County Drug Task Force Coordinator during the beginning and height of the methamphetamine lab issues. Yeah, all the way to becoming the chief. I mean, it was one of the greatest achievements of my life. I mean, it is. Besides my four kids and my wife, it ranks right up there. If you ask my wife some days, she'll tell you it ranks higher. But we try not to. We try to leave work at work, but it doesn't always happen that way.
Yeah. So having kind of all those various experiences in terms of those different roles within the department, is that kind of the mantra, the tone that you try to set for officers coming through their ranks to the department to be like, hey, there's a job that you can take advantage of if it impacts the community and involves, you know, their quality of life, you know, go for it.
When I became interim chief, and this was July of 2021, we had a supervisors meeting, and it wasn't at the office, it was at my house. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to shake things up. And we sat there, and I capped the meeting at 2 hours. I said, okay, Rome wasn't built in the day. We're not going to fix, rearrange things in one meeting. 6 hours later, we were still there. We had our whiteboard out, and the guys were just excited about the possibilities that were here. So if you don't know, we've lost a lot of great officers to other agencies. Our only goal of that meeting, we had one goal, and that was, what can we do to retain people? And so we created opportunities. It wasn't about, you know, lots of more money or anything like that. It was about creating opportunities for people. So what we did was we put a cap on how long an officer could be in the detective role, 4 years, then it rotates out. It gives someone else an opportunity. SRO came about. Well, we're looking in now with the school district possibly for a second SRO, canine program, drone program. We've done a lot of things where people can have ownership and opportunities at the police department, so hopefully they stay.
You're really evolving the landscape of the opportunities that officers have available to take advantage of, but even furthermore, the community, where they may not know that we have a drone program, or maybe they've lived under a rock and still don't know that we have a, you know, a canine program with the fundraising that's gone through to bring Kilo on board. I think that's very cool. I think it's, in a way, it's also out of the box thinking to be creative with, you know, we are competitors with our counterparts across the county and even around central Iowa, but, you know, there's plenty of things for officers to take advantage of and to grow their career and to still make an impact for the community right here in Indianola.
Absolutely. I mean, the sky is the limit, and we're not done. We're really just getting started. You know, you talk about opportunities, and things have evolved so much in the last couple years where you can do really what you want to do within our umbrella and have the autonomy and the freedom to do that sort of stuff. It's been wonderful.
Yeah. So when you think about the term community policing, which, you know, you use regularly, what does that mean to you?
So community policing can mean a lot of different things depending on where you're at. Indianola is unique. As you know, Aaron, you've worked here, what, 6-8 months now?
Oh, yep.
Yeah, so Indianola is definitely a unique community. What works here may not work in Des Moines or West Des Moines or one of the other suburbs. So what we've done for community policing is we take initiative to do different activities, and it is about, for us, giving back. You know, the motto is protect and serve, okay? We're really good at the protection part, and we're getting so much better at the serving part. We do so many events throughout the year that, you know, we give up a lot of our weekends, we give up a lot of our nights. For an example, right now, we have the Peacemakers versus the Pacemakers. It's a granny basketball game. The entire department will be there. And this one is a fundraiser for our canine unit.
No, it's very cool. And you talk about just the different examples of that community outreach. I mean, one that's even more recent is with the balloon patch sales that were sold out within 3 hours because of limited supplies. And now you're asking, or the community is asking the police department, hey, when's that next round of opportunity to purchase these going to be? Because I want to get one.
Right. So we have, I don't know, 24 different patches that we've done. You know, we'll talk about the balloon one in a second. My favorite one is the Iowa State. So before the big game, the big football game every year, the officers get to decide which patch they want to wear. And of course, I wear two Iowa patches. I feel sorry for those Iowa State fans, but whatever. And so the bet this year was between myself and Captain Hawkins that the loser has to wear the winner's patch on Monday. And Rob proudly showed off his Hawkeye patch on Monday. So we have fun with it. Getting back to the balloons, yeah, we had, 30, 40 extra patches, and literally 3 hours, they were gone. There's more on order, folks. We want to do what we can. The Balloon Museum, right? That is one of the fixtures of this community. It should be supported. It should be supported the best we know how. And yeah, $25 a patch. There's more coming. And 100% of the proceeds are going to go so they can help rebuild. They can help regain some of the items they lost.
Yeah, just such a cool way for that outreach and that support for a community partner in need. And even beyond Indianola, the police department held the first public safety chili cook-off that with all those proceeds supporting Newark Police Department Officer Jason Spurr, who a few weeks ago had passed away from his bout with cancer. Just talk about, that aspect where what the Indianola Police Department does isn't just within these lines, the jurisdictional lines, but it's far beyond, and it's in partnership with our neighboring counties and neighboring organizations as well.
We wanted to do something for one of our brothers who was sick, and we sat down in a room and came up with the chili cook-off. We here at the Indianola Police Department, we don't care whose idea it is. We don't operate that way. I don't operate that way. We took the word I out of our conversations. We don't do that. We decided chili cook-off was the way to go. And fortunately for us, we had a humongous turnout. We raised over $6,000 for his family. We wanted his family to concentrate on Jason and not about bills, not about worrying about stuff. And 100% of those proceeds went to his family. Unfortunately, a couple weeks ago, he passed away, but he will not be forgotten. He was beloved. I mean, he was. What talk about community policing. He would give his time to anyone who asked. I knew his brother really well when he worked at the sheriff's department as the chief deputy. And it's just a great law enforcement family, and it's too bad that a 46-year-old has to die from cancer. But he will not be forgotten. We will not ever let his memory be forgotten and what he did to that community, what he did for Warren County.
Transitioning gears now to the overall makeup of the Indianola Police Department. How many officers do we have on staff? Who are the people that make the organization what it is today?
So we realigned a little bit when I became police chief. We now have a chief, a captain, two lieutenants, and three sergeants, and then the officers and the clerical staff. So that is the makeup of our police department. We have three shifts, obviously, and there's a sergeant in charge of each shift. All three of my sergeants have a year experience as a supervisor, just due to the upward mobility because I got promoted. That means there's room for promotions below. We have not a lot of experience in the supervisor roles. The captain was the lieutenant for about 12 years, so he has a ton of supervisory experience. Lieutenant Largis has about that as a sergeant. So there at the upper part, there's a lot of experience. When you move past that, there is not as much experience, but I tell you what, we promoted three people with great heads on their shoulders, and they can learn from us.
What are those prime characteristics that you look for in a successful leader or just a successful employee within the department?
You got to work. We could think of all the mantras and all the sayings and everything, but the bottom line, we've really simplified it. It's do your job. That's all it really comes down to is do your job. If you do your job and you do your job well, that's what I'm looking for as the next leaders of this department. IPD is integrity, professionalism, dedication. Have the integrity to do the right thing. Be professional at all times, no matter what. I could sit here, if this was a video show, I could show you body camera footage after body camera footage of officers getting berated, sworn at, that sort of thing. And they maintain their professionalism. They maintain their dignity. They never took it to the level where the person was misbehaving. So, that's what's important. Stay above it, do your job, and go on to the next.
Are there any kind of memorable experiences or shifts that you yourself or just the department collectively has held? I know we do a number of different things for at events, working security. I mean, I've seen the photos, especially at Hinterland when we're supporting, you know, a neighboring community. That's very cool. What are some other things that come to mind that you think of where, you know, again, Indianola is unique and you can do this?
Oh boy. You know, thankfully we're getting more and more events here. I know Stacy Schoenbrand with the balloons is a big proponent of utilizing the balloon field for other events besides balloons is great and they do wonderful and we're out there too. But using it for concerts, the financial impact, I just had a conversation with Stacy this week, so I know a little bit about the financial impact. For balloons, the financial impact was north of $4 million for a 10-day event.
Wow.
But she also told me that NotFest last or 2 years ago, one day, the financial impact, I believe she told me, was $4.6 million
wow.
for the community. So we wholeheartedly support these events. Yes, are they taxing on us? Yes. Are they huge logistics issues? Yes. But we're pretty good at logistics, and we love having these events. Keep them coming. It's great for the community. It's great for the balloons. And we have a great time at it.
And how actively involved is Indianola PD? We've included Indianola Fire and maybe some other city agencies of kind of part of those pre-planning conversations, whether it be, you know, over at the balloons or other event organizers who want to host an event here in town.
Well, Aaron, you know the answer to that, right? We just had a meeting last week. 92 revivals coming May 4th. And, you know, everyone from the police chief, the fire chief, down to the communications director, because, you know, we have things that are closed that day, roads that are closed that day, and it's important to get the community on board and give them the most accurate and timely information we can.
And while you are at those events, I mean, obviously safety is that number one top priority, right?
Absolutely, 100%. I think it was last year or 2 years ago at Hinterland, there was a storm coming. And the lightning got within the parameters of time to clear the event. We had the event cleared in under 15 minutes, had to clear, I think it was 15, 16,000 people out. And then it passed and we had to get them back in through the same way that they came in originally. They had to go back through the magnetometers to make sure. And so it was a safe event.
Yeah. No, I mean, it just goes back to the importance of that pre-planning because, you know, you have storm spotters, you have all these different technologies, which I want to get to that too with technologies. How has technology shifted throughout your career when you first started to where we're at today with all the different aspects that you have to utilize as a department within your own vehicles and just through investigations to some of the things that the community's seen?
That is a wonderful question because on my desk, I keep my beeper. So back in 1994, I had to keep a beeper on me 24 hours a day. For those of you that don't know what a beeper is, it was a pager that would beep with a phone number that you had to call back. So when I came to work, I had my beeper and I had a pocket full of quarters because I never knew where I was going to be. And I knew where all the payphones were throughout the county because as leading the Warren and Marion County Drug Task Force, I didn't sit at a desk. I was out. I was out surveilling. I was out trying to get vehicles stopped, out watching places. And my beeper would go off, and I would have to find the closest phone to make that call. It could have been an informant. It could have been something important. So, I mean, that's how things have changed. The police chief was not allowed to live outside of the city when I first started. But technology has come so far that, you know, you got your cell phone and it's 24/7. Anyone can get a hold of you at any time.
Man. And just what about the technology like within your vehicles and what you guys are able to do when you are conducting your business and just how things have just drastically changed for the better to be more efficient?
Back in the 90s, when you arrested someone, you wrote your citation, hand wrote your citation out, and you wrote your probable cause for the arrest out and you handed it to an administrative assistant and they would type it on the typewriter and then you'd make copies and that copy would have to go to jail and a copy would have to go to our folder and then you'd go on to the next. Boy, have things changed. everything. We have computers in the car now. Everything is computer generated that way. It's amazing the changes. I'm a dinosaur and I've seen all these changes and we have kept up with the technology.
One of the changes that the community is seeing right now, and we've seen a lot of active conversations both online and just in person, would be those cameras that we're seeing on some of our roadways here in town. Can you just shed some light into what those devices are and kind of what they're doing here?
We are not the first community to have these devices. They're all over Central Iowa. They're all over the United States. If you drive up to the mall, you go by about 18 or 20 of them. They are license plate readers and only license plate readers. They do not generate tickets. They do not do anything like that. Altoona, Ankeny, Clive, Johnston, Pleasant Hill, Urbandale, Waukee, West Des Moines, they all have these devices. So we are going to have 12 of them in place, and all they are is license plate readers. They read the license plate, and they take a side or back profile image of the vehicle. We can't tell who's in the vehicle. There's no pictures of people in the vehicle. There's no audio, nothing like that. What they are good for is stolen vehicles, missing and endangered children, missing and endangered people. That's what these cameras are going to be used for.
And so far, there are about, as of this recording, there are about 4 installed currently in town. Is that correct?
Yes, 4 installed in town, and there's going to be a total of 12, yes.
And I know that there's been some discussions about how this is funded. Can you just shed some light into kind of that process and kind of what that cycle will look like?
Sure. The first 2 years have been funded by ARPA funds, the American Rescue Plan Act through Warren County. And after that, it's my responsibility then to go to the city council and ask for continual funding for these.
Just how important are these cameras, albeit, as you just said too earlier, they're not to get you doing traffic violations or anything else of a crime. It's merely for the aspects you addressed. Just how important is that for the community?
I mean, it's so important. We have crimes all the time. Let's use a big box store, for example. We have one at the north end of town that occasionally gets things stolen from them. Well, their cameras only go so far. It might get a vehicle description, a red truck. Well, if something gets stolen and the suspect is in a red truck, we can go to our cameras and we can enter red trucks and find one that matches the footage or matches the description. And then we have a license plate, we have a lead, we have somewhere to go. So this is going to help immensely solve crimes.
And within that data and this footage, it's all stored through Indianola Police Department and dedicated officers have access to this, and only they have access to this. Is that right?
That is right. If we have a crime in another city, or another city has a crime that it's a vehicle related down here, they have to give a case number and a reason to access this. This isn't like free will. We can look up whoever we want to look up. We want to see where the city manager is going. It doesn't work that way. Everything is recorded. Everything is audited. We're going to keep a tight rein on things, and we have a great policy in place to do that.
Now, going back to the overall aspect of the department, what were some of the successes and highlights that you can share, or just the overall moments of pride that you take from last year's Indianola Police Department?
Let's start with our school resource officer. So we were the last big school to go to a school resource officer program, and it was overdue. We all recognized it was overdue, and the school was great to work with to get this implemented. And, you know, our first piece to this was, who is the right person for this job? It's not a retirement gig where you can go and just sit there at your desk. We wanted someone engaging. We wanted someone friendly. But we also wanted someone that when it was serious time, it was serious time, because things happen at schools. We've seen it all over the country. So Jay Hackett was chosen as our school resource officer. He's in his 5th year now, so we like to say he's a super senior this year. You know, maybe he'll graduate next year. he's staying as long as he's comfortable out there, and he loves it. Trust me, we talk every day. he is the right person for this job. He's a big teddy bear. If you've ever met Jay, he's loud. He's always has a smile on his face. He's just a big teddy bear. Some of the concerns up front before this program was started that this will be a pipeline to the criminal justice system. And that was absolutely one of our goals, not to have that happen. So most official interactions with Jay are handled informally. They're handled, there may be a police report, which is a formal thing, but it's for record keeping. But most of it are handled through the teachers, the student, and the student's parents. That's how we want to handle issues that happen. Now, occasionally it happens where criminal charges are filed, but I know Jay, I have some stats here in front of me. I know Jay responded to 544 official incidents in 2023. It means a report was done. May seem like a lot. Jay deals with a lot of mental health issues, and he's trained in it. He's had advanced training in it. Of those 544 incidents, only 32 led to criminal charges. So as you can tell, this is not a pipeline. This is not our goal to charge people and just get them in the criminal system. But sometimes it happens, and it has to happen.
Wow. No, I mean, just the impact alone, you share those numbers, and with Officer Hackett and his advanced training, I mean, that's remarkable. And he's also, as we've celebrated during the Granny League basketball game, your 2000, I think the actual title of it is the Fiscal Year 24 Employee of the Year for the city of Indianola. Just how deserving is Officer Hackett for this distinction?
First of all, this is not a police department award. This is a citywide award voted on by the city engagement committee. And there, you know, we have a lot of deserving people at the city. Don't get me wrong, a lot of hard workers. Jay deserves it. He's worked very hard, especially last 5 years in the school. He knows that, especially at the beginning, all eyes were on him and how this was going to go, which in turn, all eyes were on the police department, all eyes were on the city. And he has done a fantastic job making this one of our greatest successes. He not only represents the police department well and the schools well, he represents the city well. He's fantastic. I hope he never wants to leave the job. He makes my life easy.
What about some other stats or findings that you'd like to share from the report or anything else that's important that you want to share regarding the police department?
Yeah, so this is going to air in about a week, and I'm hoping to have our 2023 annual report posted by then, and I'm going to give a presentation in front of council. I think that's coming up first part of May. But one thing I'm proud of that we implemented this year was the DARE program. We brought the DARE program back. In this day and age of social media, when people think of the DARE program, they think, you know, drugs. And yes, that is a big aspect of it. But the choice or the not choice to use drugs comes with different things. It comes with choices. It comes with bullying. It comes with all those sort of things, especially in this social media age where you don't have to be bullied or you don't have to be, you know, choices face to face. It could be on Instagram or Facebook or, you know, every time I say Facebook, my kids call me old, or any of the other social media platforms. And we're very proud to bring DARE back. It's been a long time since we've had it. And DARE graduation's coming up again. And it's been a great success. Officer Ross Marshall is our DARE instructor, and he's doing a fantastic job. In 2023, we brought a new officer on, and his name is Kilo. He's got four legs and likes to lick people all the time. And so we have a canine again, and we were looking specifically for a very social dog that we could do presentations and bring him everywhere. I mean, he's going to be at the Granny basketball game. And a dog with a high drive that would find narcotics. So we found a great dog. He's a Belgian Malinois and German Shepherd. He was imported from Poland. I don't have the name of the city in front of me, but I'd probably get it wrong even if I did. We looked high and low and found Kilo, and he has been a fantastic addition to the police department. Since we brought him on, our controlled substance cases have gone up 19.9% last year, and that is largely in part to we've dedicated a detective to narcotics, and we brought Kilo on. So one thing I like to say, Aaron, is, yeah, we're a police department. We enforce laws. We enforce all that sort of stuff. But there is an educational aspect to that. That is why we have DARE. That is, so we like to balance the education and the enforcement.
With the officers that you have on board, I believe the police department's in a recruitment period again right now. Talk about what the department is doing, and just to be, you know, competing with some of those bigger agencies that we talked about earlier in the podcast.
Right. In 2023, we lost 5 officers, 1 to a retirement and 4 chose to go to different places. No, and not once have I blamed them. Not once have I given them a bad recommendation because they want to leave. You know, I'm all for people bettering themselves if they think that's what's better. I'm going to support it. It's hard sometimes to retain people in Indianola. We're such a unique community where, you know, we're 10 miles from all the rest of the metro suburbs and Des Moines, and there's a lot to offer. That's why we're trying to change the culture here, get more opportunities for them to have officers stay. Right now, we're in great shape. We have 1 unfilled position, which was a authorized 24th position. So we're finally almost at full strength. I can see the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. We get that 24th person, and then we can really start doing a lot of different things.
And the department, in connection or in joint efforts with the community development department, a newly created position with the community services officer. Talk about that position and the individual that just recently began that role.
So the community service officer is a shared position between community development and the police department. He's a civilian. He does have a different type of uniform. You will see him out and about. And he is going to help with from the police side, things such as unlocking cars that people lock their keys in, lock their dogs in, lock their kids in once in a while. Traffic control, funeral escorts, those sort of things, which will free up the certified police officers to concentrate on the crimes and that sort of thing. For community development, we'll work on code enforcement. I know I've talked to Charlie DeSella, our community development director. He's got a new title now, and I can't tell you what that is, but that's one of his roles. They were very reactive to those sorts of complaints. Well, hopefully now they can be a little bit more proactive and be greater on the reactive side, have a faster turnover to resolve the complaints that come into Charlie's office.
Yeah, and just how vital is that role? I mean, you talk about it's freeing up your certified police officers from having to do those important tasks, don't get me wrong, but then also from the community development side, being able to handle, to continue to keep that upper trajectory of successful completions of inspections and not having too many delays. Just how vital, as we're starting to shift and grow our community, is this role specifically?
It's going to be huge. I'm a believer in the broken windows theory, which I don't know exactly where it came from, but Mayor Giuliani in New York, he believed in that. And crime was reduced so much by you fix the things that need fix, and it doesn't attract that element of people. You fix the broken windows, you fix the junk in the yard, you fix the mowed yards, you fix all those things that need fixed, and it beautifies the community. It helps the community grow. You know, we have RagBrag coming, right? That's not a secret. And we want to put our best foot forward. We want to show people our beautiful community, the beautiful Simpson College, the square, how vital it is. And, you know, we want it to look great for that day. And we want it to look great the other 364 days, right? So that's part of the role of the community service officer.
Lastly, Chief, I just want to open the floor for you to share any closing thoughts or remarks that you have or anything that we might be missing.
No, I mean, so 30 years into it, my wife says I need to work longer, so I'm going to keep working. No, I'm so grateful to work here at the city of Indianola. I'm grateful to have my job. The men and women that work at the police department and work at the city, this is a great place.
Well, Chief, I want to thank you for your leadership and what you are doing, leading the Indianola Police Department, but also leading the city through the various things, the various efforts that you do day in and day out, 365 days a year, even on vacation. I remember, I think when I had joined the city my first month or two, I'd called you and you were on a combine, on a farm, and you took the time to answer my questions. So I appreciate your leadership and your willingness to help out a new employee and all of our employees and all of our city.
Anytime. Absolutely. And yeah, that's my part-time job too. I forgot to mention that.
Well, hey, thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Indie Unplugged. Make sure, if you're not already following us, make sure you hit that follow button and leave us a comment, leave us a review. Again, this is our fourth episode of Indie Unplugged, so we're a little bit new on dabbling into the podcast game, so provide us with your feedback, your comments, your questions, and maybe someday you'll be a guest on Indie Unplugged.